It's Monday and time for the Back to Business podcast, featuring Calgary's industry leaders. Welcome today's show host, Kim Hayden.
Are you building a business? Is your business halfway to where you want it to go? Have you set your goals for your 3, 5, and 10 years? Now imagine 100. Our guest today is here to talk about what creates exceptional service and exceptional business, but compound it with longevity. John Gorman's in the house talking about Halliburton and Halliburton's 100-year anniversary and what they are bringing to communities and to families that actually are part of the Halliburton community and what they're bringing to communities, plus the families that they build within the Halliburton community. But first, our land acknowledgement. We here at the Calgary Petroleum Club, in the spirit of reconciliation, honor and acknowledge that the land on which we learn, work, and live is Treaty 7 region of Southern Alberta. This place is the traditional homeland for the First Nations and Métis peoples, and today we all are part of this treaty land. Welcome to the show, John.
Thanks for having me.
It's an honor to have you here at the Back to Business here at the Calgary Petroleum Club because you're celebrating something big, and we have, and I'm sure you have lots pulling at your time. So, and you just got off a plane, 13
yes.
hour. Yes. So this will, if John nods off, worry, folks, I'll poke him a little here.
I was yawning all morning. Hopefully I don't yawn this afternoon.
This is really cool because we're talking a lot on the show around startups and new developments and kind of the new technologies and everything that's happening out there. Everything is focused on the new. Whereas with Halliburton, it's the adoption of new while carrying tradition forward. Would you agree that that's kind of Halliburton is steady?
100%. We look back at our founder's original motto was, in short, we intend to maintain leadership in our chosen field. And I think the steadiness of that comment still rings true today.
Would you say that leadership is even more important with where the world is right now, with so many people being kind of, I guess, isolated or siloed or fragmented out, trying to build or do things on their own, that mentorship and leadership is even more important?
Yeah, I mean, we have a very solid leadership. I mean, if you look back at my career, even when I came into the office in like 25 years ago, I've only had 2 CEOs in that entire time. So it's pretty impressive to think that, you know, you have, you know, a steady captain at the helm. And, you know, even my immediate boss, you know, he's retiring this year, but you know, he's over 40 year hand as well. So, you know, we have a significant amount of years of leadership in my direct management.
Okay. So for those listeners that are not, from the oil and gas space, but from the business space, can you give us a quick synopsis as to Halliburton and what they do?
Okay, so we are a company of about 45,000 people, made up of 140 nationalities-ish, working in over 100 countries. We service everything from the drilling and completions, and then also the couple of pieces that we've added on more recently. By recently, it's, you know, almost 40 years ago now, but Landmark Graphics, which is a software company. And then Summit is a very recent business that we brought in that deals with artificial lift. I come from a background of Sperry Drilling. Alfred Sperry was a inventor himself. He was very much like Earl P. Halliburton. Did a lot of directional drilling technology, measurement while drilling technology. And then when you look at how that moved into Canada then became one of the bases of Sperry's development, where we've come up with a lot of our own technology through Sperry. And I think one thing with Halliburton is Halliburton really does appreciate the name, the brand, They also appreciate the brands of the businesses they've bought. So Sperry, which came with the Dresser merger in 1999. We've maintained that name ever since. Baroid is our mud company. You know, that's come across at the same time. Landmark and Summit, like I just said, two of our more recent acquisitions. So, you know, we have a lot of pride in not just what Halliburton has developed, but the different leaders of those companies that we've acquired as well. So, yeah, so we do everything from soup to nuts on the drilling and completion side, except the rigs. So everything from drill bits to motors to measurement well drilling, logging well drilling, wireline, cement, hydraulic fracturing, always in the front of mind here in North America. Sure, I left somebody out. Completion tools. So yeah, it's a great business and one that I would never trade for the rest of my life.
What separates Halliburton from being the person that acquires versus being acquired? What is that unique piece? Because before we got started, you said everything in my life has been because of being with Halliburton, of being part of that community, that business. But because it's not the drill bits. There's something uniquely fundamental to Halliburton that has allowed it to acquire versus being acquired.
Yeah, and I can go back to like a direct measurement. I was acquired. you look at Dresser, who I had worked for as part of Sperry. We were acquired by Halliburton in 1999, and I won't name names, but one of the people who was negotiating the merger of Halliburton and Dresser said very early on, I recognized the fact that this was not a merger of two equals. This was absolutely Halliburton going to be taking over Dresser. So interesting story behind that. So Dick Cheney was the CEO at the time. Dave Lassar was one of the chief guys doing the acquiring. I think it's when you look back at Dave's history with the company, and the fact that he was going to be the next CEO, he was very much a history buff of Halliburton as well, and I'm a history buff of Halliburton. And you know that, you know, you look at all the companies that Halliburton has acquired, and sometimes it has had to sell off as well or close. It's very much an iterative process of finding the right pieces of business that fit together. But I think it's that knowledge of, you know, how do we get success out of a business that we either acquire or develop ourselves, and it's been very successful thus far.
Let's take this to you as a part of the system, a part of the company. We see a lot of people moving around, and we see a lot of pieces behind. There's things happening behind the scene, right? And you may not have all the information, but you have to weather the ups and downs. And the reality is oil and gas has had, like, it can be boom and bust, right? What has helped you as a leader, as a key component, as the VP, what has helped you be able to weather those ups and downs and just kind of stay steady?
Yeah, in my 35 years with the company, there has never been a flat spot. I don't think we've ever had a flat spot. You're always in some part of the cycle. And I think when I look back at what makes it most successful is that consistent strategy. We try not to make too many decisions based on short-term results. I think that we realize where the oil patch is going to be in a few years or in 5 years or in 10 years. So we try not to waver too much and say, okay, well, this is going to be a bad year, so we're going to have to lay everybody off. We know that we can't do that and then effectively be part of the upturn that happens right after it, because it's such a quick cycle up and down. you know, I look back at my career, we've gone through, you know, a couple of absolute disasters with the, you know, financial crisis, COVID. I mean, two things that essentially shut down the industry, but you have to be able to look past those major events and be able to realize that, you know, there is going to be a demand for oil and gas tomorrow. And I still believe that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, petroleum is far more than just fueling the vehicle we drive. It's 70% of everything we touch, right? You will not be able to find a surgical suite that will replace grandma's pacemaker that does not have a feedstock, a petroleum feedstock-based product in it. So, and that's where I kind of get, I watch a lot of the pushback, and it's like, okay, yes, I think it's great to have all sorts of energy sources. We should be diverse. We have a diverse globe, however. This is not something going away tomorrow. So having companies like Halliburton govern responsibly helps us move forward. What do you think is a lesson that you've seen that has impacted Halliburton or yourself that other business leaders, not specific to oil and gas, but other business leaders, they're ignoring or they're missing and can cause them challenges?
Yes, it's a good question. I'm not sure I would say we're ignoring anything. It's, you know, what do we focus on? Again, I come back to strategic thought, surrounding yourself in good people, knowing where you're going to be in the near future and distant future. You know, coming back to the oil and gas industry itself, I'm a big fan of quotes. I like quotes. And if you're a landman watcher and you've watched Billy Bob Thornton have come a couple of his diatribes, you know, we have to have also all sources of energy in the future to try and grow the middle class of the world's population, because there's still, you know, far too many people in the world that don't have daily access to clean, reliable, abundant energy.
Well, and that brings me to what are people getting wrong? What is the misconceptions out there that really, come on, we can move past this? What do you think people get wrong about the energy industry?
Well, I think there's a general belief or general thought to believe everything you see or read. And, you know, I always ask people, I've got a daughter, she turns 16 here in a couple of weeks. And, I always say to, think for yourself. Don't just believe what everybody else is saying. Think for yourself. And I think to be able to have critical thinking is kind of key to our future leaders' success, because right now I don't think there's as much critical thinking as there probably should be.
I would completely agree on that. I just had the opportunity to watch a film, documentary, Help is on the Way, and it was in part funded by Shell, that it was about Light Up the World, which is a Canadian organization.
Working
that
went to Latin America.
Yeah, went to Peru to put up solar panels, which now through the Starlink network and some kind of networking and AIs that we have, they can actually even monitor and help train from Canada to central Peru, and how literally just turning on a light bulb can change the trajectory of a young person in a energy impoverished community. But to get that there, I loved this film. And I recommend everybody go and take a look at this, because it really talks about how what you just talked about, all forms of energy are needed to get the world where all human beings have opportunity. And they had to take a jet, and then they had to take buses. And at one point in time, they actually had to have people help manually move stuff because there was a landslide on one of the roads. But I totally agree. It's that cognitive thinking, the recondition yourself to ask the three-year-old's question, why? Don't just accept whatever's in front of you. When we're talking about that, let's talk about the changes you've seen. 35 years, what has changed in Halliburton and in the industry, and what hasn't?
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, change is constant. I like to say change is constant, but strategy is forever. You know, I think there's, you know, we are still largely doing the same things. I mean, we're still drilling for oil and gas. I mean, our CEO will tell you that, you know, while we have our Halliburton Labs projects and whatnot, our incubator for, you know, new battery technology, new energy source technology and whatnot, we're still our oil and gas roots. A lot of that is easily transferable into different industries like geothermal, or, you know, now looking at some of the geothermal things, you know, what are different ways of trying to induce geothermal heat? It's not just going into a hot spot in the earth. How do we deal with data centers and drilling for data centers and putting them in locations in the middle of a gas field to be able to have their own gas-fired electricity instead of having a lot of transmission? Transmission lines for energy are going to be one of the biggest pieces in our future as we try to move energy to people. So, you know, what are different ways that we can keep the energy in the neighborhood of the people and not have so many energy or so many systems that are required as far as transmission goes? So I think there's you know, quite a few changes that way. If you look at the offshore industry, which I love, I worked offshore quite a bit in Gulf of America, offshore Nova Scotia, Newfoundland, and even a little bit in the Arctic, and offshore California, which is unusual. But don't get me started on California. There's all sorts of energy discussions to be had there. But love the offshore, and I think a lot of our technology has come from offshore. And when you look at the new technology that comes out every year in Halliburton, a lot of that is because of offshore, whether it's deep water or like we have in Eastern Canada on platforms. The operational rates offshore are so high that every second counts.
Yes.
So how do we improve speed to drill deeper safely with less emissions and have higher production? So I mean, you're trying to do all those things that we do on land, but they have such a high value on an offshore operation that I really am happy I had that experience to be able to say, you know, how do we have those minuscule changes to save seconds, and those seconds add up into minutes, and minutes add up into hours, and to see the changes that have been caused to technology worldwide. It's absolutely amazing to watch, and it still is.
If you were to lead a conversation with the next generation of energy developers, what would you say to them to help them achieve even remotely a success like Halliburton or even your career?
I think it's keep an open mind. You know, we very often become stuck in trying to do one thing very well. That might work for Vijay Singh in golf, but you know, when you have a number of different pieces that can work together, how you make those pieces work together, I think, is going to be the next great piece of the business. And, you know, if you look at, you know, advances in AI, advances in automation, how we're going to be minimizing personnel on board, being able to steer wells from a central facility in downtown Calgary, offshore somewhere in the world. You know, those are some of the things that, you know, you look to see. These are going to be the major changes in how we do our day-to-day business right now. I think, in all honesty, I think a lot of the, you know, highest paid jobs in our future are going to be people that don't mind getting their hands dirty.
Yes.
And it's, you know, if you want to be a welder, electrician, pipe fitter, you know, those people are getting more and more rare. And I'd be interested to see in another 20 or 25 years, you know, just the improvement in uptake from high schools into vocational jobs. I think it's going to be an incredible change.
That my daughter's going to looking into the electrical program at SAIT. I could not agree more. I have said for even before the evolution of AI and all of everything that's come, I have I remember back in the 80s and 90s where I was coming out of school and everybody had their two cents and everybody's going, go be a lawyer, go do this, go do that. And I'm like looking at people going, you know, at some point in time, it's going to be more expensive to get a plumber to your house than a lawyer. And now with the evolution of AI, a lot of what a lawyer does can be displaced and no longer needs a human being. But that plumber, yeah, still need a plumber. You still need an electrician. You still need somebody. Now, those positions are evolving. I mean, I've been to SAIT here and seen their robotics lab. There's some crazy stuff happening. Mm-hmm. But it's still going to be about the human being. I want to touch real quickly on Halliburton as a family, as a community. That's one of the impressions that I got when I was scrolling through. And by the way, folks, if you want to see people who love their job, go to Instagram and check out the Halliburton page. Underneath stories, it shows the people who are working there, who are being not only they're being recognized. I think that's the word. They're being recognized for being excellent and showing up and being part of the energy. How does a company get people excited to show up?
That's a good question. I think everybody has a personal connection to something that they care about. If we talked for another 5 minutes, we'd probably find something that we know together. It's kind of funny. We did a Make-A-Wish Foundation piece. It's called Pull for Life, or Pull for Wishes. Sorry, and. It was up at McMahon Stadium this September, and we had all the different frac companies raise money and then have a competition in the parking lot of McMahon Stadium to pull your own truck and other in each other's trucks. And what was amazing to me was just watching the sheer joy we had from our frac crews to come down and participate in that And then just the follow-up with it on how do we do that again next year? And then, you know, I asked guys, hey, why did you come down? And one guy said, oh, my brother's my brother's son was given a wish by Children's Wish Foundation. So I said, well, hey, me too. You know, I had a niece. She passed away when she was five. But one of the last things she did was she was able to do a Make-A-Wish trip. So it takes no time at all to be able to find some sort of a connection. And I think that when we look at the charities that we're involved with, we rarely get involved with charities that we're not personally involved with. It's rare to, you know, sponsor something just with a financial aid without having some sort of personal commitment as well. And it just doesn't take very long to find that personal commitment and people take part in it. So happy to be part of the Halliburton Volunteer Council here in Calgary. And, you know, we kind of look at different things we're going to do each month to support different organizations. And we've got some great young leaders that are coming through that leadership of that program. And I just love them to death because their enthusiasm and desire to help is just so refreshing.
If you were 25 again, what's the advice you give yourself? What is the insight that you could share that could help somebody when they think that there is not a 25, 35, 45-year career opportunity, or that, oh, well, I'm not going to really make any change, right? What's the advice you would give your 25-year-old self today to help them move forward?
That's a great question. And, you know, I know there's probably a desire for people to look at a job as, you know, just a job. And it's going to lead me to my next job, which will lead me to my next job. And I just don't think it's a bad thing to look for a career. And when you look inside of a company, figure out, you know, how do you go from job to job to job inside that company rather than outside. You know, I grew up in a very humble family. My dad was a high school principal. I'm a first generation immigrant. I was born in Northern Ireland.
I think you're the tallest Irish person I know.
Yeah. Well, there's a story behind that too. My parents were born in 1938, so they spent a lot of time not getting great volumes of food to eat until 1950, when they stopped rationing food in the UK. So yeah, my parents essentially were on rations for the first 12 years of their life. So I have some tall grandparents,
but there you go.
not very tall parents. But yeah, it's a so came from humble beginnings. Grew up in Saskatchewan, worked in northern Saskatchewan in the bush in the summer. I would say to people, don't be afraid to get a job like that as well. Go work in the bush. I mean, I remember a guy coming into the office once, and I said, what'd you do for a summer job last year? And he said, I worked in northern Saskatchewan, a fishing camp, fixing small engines. I go, you're hired. It was like, you don't mind being in remote lands, learning your first job. And you're good with your hands, so fire away.
So coming in, so is Halliburton one of those companies or organizations where somebody can come in and grow through it, job to job or position to position?
100%. I mean, one of my favorite things we do every year, part of our strategy sessions in Houston, is succession planning with our CEO. It's CEO-led. I mean, if you don't think he's involved in succession planning, you just get shocked at the number of people he knows and can question and can talk about from his meetings with him in the past. So we'll go through the succession planning and look through all the different geographies and product lines in the world and have a good deep dive down a few levels of people to figure out what training people need to move on to that next role, what location they need to move to take on a different product line or a different geography, a different function, see what those roles and responsibilities need to be to then assign training, assign mentorships. I love the mentorships that I have with different people. And that defined process, you know, just makes me realize every day that, you know, we have that ability to still grow 35 or 40 year employees. You don't have to come here and work for a couple of years, go somewhere else and work a couple of years. You can achieve all you want to be at the same company.
I love that. Grow within, mm-hmm. grow within, create the community. It just sounds like Halliburton's hitting it on kind of every mark. It's just making it happen. There isn't a lot of places you can go to find a community that will help you as an individual achieve your own goals of owning a home and having a family and having that consistency and that and the challenge and the mentorship. So I think there's a lot to be said there. What's something that you take away when you come into places like getting off a 13-hour flight and coming into the club? What are some of the experiences you have within clubs like the Calgary Petroleum Club that you think has helped lend to your successes and growth?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, one of the things that I've prided myself on is the ability to make relationships. I think we need to continue to nurture that. And, you know, that's why I was excited to become a board member. here at the Petroleum Club and just help kind of shape some of those experiences that we have, especially for young professionals who want to join any kind of a discussion that is happening at a senior level. I mean, it's probably the most welcoming place you'll ever see. I mean, when I have people that come from Houston, we very often stop in here. We'll be going meeting to meeting, meeting downtown. But, you know, as we say, the Petroleum Club is always a good central location. So we'll stop in here for coffee. You always run into somebody you meet. I can honestly say I've never walked in here and not had some sort of a discussion around what's the business of the day, or run into a customer and been able to create some sort of a new opportunity. So I think we need to recognize the value of a relationship, and nurture those relationships and not just get stuck behind a desk or stuck in a cubicle where you never get out. Get out and network.
What's the one thing I haven't asked at this point in time about Halliburton, about the opportunities, about how it builds community, not only from the energy we consume, but the people who live next door to us?
I know, it's been pretty good. I think that the if you look at just my experience, I've been extremely fortunate to be able to travel with the company. I think I've moved, 10 or 12 times with the company. I've got to experience different cultures. And by one of those cultures, I mean Louisiana.
That's a culture unto its own.
I loved every place I've lived and worked. Love the people that I've been with, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. I have a red watch. Got my red watch for my 35th anniversary. It says Big Red on the side of it.
Yes, the Big Red Award. Yes.
Well, that too. Our nickname is Big Red, and I have a Harley that its license plate.
Wasn't Big Red a chewing gum?
Yeah. Spicy. Yeah.
A little spicy. Yeah. Really sweet though. Yeah. Yeah, it was good stuff. Yeah.
Man, might need to use that.
There you go. John, I can't thank you enough for sharing your time today and sharing your time here at the club by being on the board. But also, I am absolutely certain, beyond a shadow of doubt, that throughout your course of 35 years, you have changed lives, not only within the company, but on the street you live in, and even as leadership to your own children's friends. I thank you.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely, folks. You're going to get all of John's information. We'll be in the show notes. And until next time, remember, everybody keeps saying it. It's true. About relationships. I'll be here when you come and visit at the Calgary Petroleum Club.
Thank you for joining us today on the Back to Business podcast. Be sure to visit calpeteclub.com, CalPeteClub.com, to find out more about upcoming events, networking opportunities, and membership. If you are not already a valued member at the CPC, where we are proudly connecting and supporting Calgary's business leaders.